Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hey, and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing? It's Genuinely Grace with you. A whole week on, literally 7 days since the announcement that Steve Wright in the Afternoon is going to be no more on BBC Radio 2. For those of you who don't know, I've been part of that show for 23 years. Oh my God, I was thinking about it the other day. It's just, I only know that exactly because Steve's been doing it 24. I started on the morning show, Saturday morning show with him. And then I remember because I was... soon after I started, I was pregnant with my son. So I know exactly how long it was. Wow. What a thing. Most people who, well, if you are a listener to Radio 2, you'll have heard the news. You won't miss the Twitter storm that went down afterwards either. The sad thing is that Steve's not actually on Twitter. So we have to make sure that you saw all those amazing messages of support. It's a real thing when something like that comes to an end. And Steve said, you know, his message, his statement, if you like, was just... so, I don't know, generous, really. And as somebody said on Twitter, actually, pretty classy. You know, he said, I've I can't hang on to the slot forever. But there's no doubt it's huge. It's absolutely huge when something like that, that is so much part of your life, gets kind of, you know, taken away. And obviously so much more so for Steve than for me. I've only ever been a co-host. It's not my show, but it has been an absolutely huge part of my life, to say the least. And it was because I was on that show that I ended up doing all the my sort of second career, if you like, because I used to talk about, you know, we do lifestyle-y stuff, and I used to talk about my passion for holistic living, and my older son was sort of just a couple of years old when I started the show, and so I used to talk about just all of the stuff that I was interested in, you know, the skincare without chemicals and washing your clothes without chemicals and organic food and sustainability. I often joke that I was, you know, talking about coconut oil before it had its own publicist. All of that stuff I used to bang on about on the air, and the guys used to kind of take the mickey out of me and fade the mic down. Oh, there she goes again. You know, she's, you know, there she goes again. The hippie, the, you know, all the stuff they used to call me. But it was all done. It was all great fun, you know, and I remember I used to get hundreds of emails from people saying, actually, you know, don't let those guys kind of take the mic, because I'm genuinely interested. Can I get a natural deodorant that works, you know, or can I really wash my clothes with laundry balls? And so that's really how my kind of second career came about, because a publisher came to me and said, we love hearing, you know, you talk about this stuff on the radio, and you're obviously really passionate about it. So can you write a book? And I remember saying, oh, don't be daft. Of course I can't write a book, I'm not a writer. And the rest is history, really. The publisher kind of worked with me and helped me to realise that I am really passionate about what I talk about, and that's what matters. And the first book came out in 2006, in Perfectly Natural Woman, and then the rest is history. I was kind of off doing my holistic living stuff. And as you know, if you're new to all of this and you're thinking, well, what's that got to do with this? Well, I've often said many times that all of those years since kind of, you know, 1998, really, or 2000, I've been banging on about holistic living and all things natural. Yet I was stepping around that elephant in the room. There's alcohol. Thank goodness my shtick was called Imperfectly Natural. Otherwise, I really don't know how I'd have gotten away with it, even with myself. But I was literally stepping around this elephant in the room, you know, and because I was busy and I was on the radio and I was on the TV as well at that point, and I had 4 kids, of course I thought I needed my treat of a glass of wine, for God's sake, you know. So it became, that became my self-care, and I made, you know, lots of jokes about it. And I mean, who was I kidding, really? And it went on for years, that absolute cognitive dissonance, really, when I look back. And, you know, now I can see it in other people who are also in the kind of holistic world, or they're healers or they're therapists. And just like me, they're just stepping around this elephant. They really are. And, oh, goodness, my only regret is I didn't do it sooner. So anyways, I'm hugely grateful for the opportunities that that show gave me, because, you know, without that show, I wouldn't have, I would certainly, you know, I'd have just inverted commas, been a singer and someone doing radio. I never would have thought that I had would have the opportunity to be able to share my passion of holistic living and now, obviously, sobriety, you know, with the world. So I'm hugely grateful. And it's going to leave a massive gap. I mean, massive. Absolutely. And the really interesting piece, the reason I'm sharing all of this with you, because there'll be people thinking, this is the Alcohol Free Life podcast. What the hell has her radio career got to do with any of it? The reason I'm sharing this is I do have a point to all of this. And that is that I have known that the show is ending since March. So I was told in March. And which is very nice of them, actually, to at least give us a heads up. But of course, I couldn't share the information. We didn't, you know, want to break the news until the BBC wanted to announce that Steve was leaving and that Scott Mills was taking over. So I didn't know who the replacement was going to be at that point. So I have literally told no one other than my family. And so it's been really interesting. So I've lived with this news that everything is going to change for me since March, but it's been a secret, right? An actual secret that I've not shared with anyone other than immediate family. And that's been really, really interesting, because of course there have been times when I've had to kind of bite my tongue and can't, you know, sort of fully speak up or whatever it might be. And I really so hugely recognise the link here for when people are, you know, something big is happening in their life when it comes to switching over from being someone who drinks alcohol. Now, what's really interesting for me is that I knew about this in March, but it was only last Friday that Steve announced it on BBC Radio 2, and then it was on the national news. I mean, how often does a DJ leaving a station make national news, right? It was amazing. And it absolutely blew up, you know, trending on Twitter, and it was in all the mainstream newspapers. So that was 7 days ago. And when that news broke, that was when it finally hit me. So in other words, when other people found out, when it suddenly became about what other people thought, it was a whole new level of emotion and just tricky and a little bit awkward and a little bit, oh, you know, you can imagine all the emotions that I had to go through once other people knew. And it really made me realise, my God, there's such an analogy here. This is how it was for me when I stopped drinking, because I didn't tell anybody at all, right? I didn't get connected. I didn't have any support. Once I started to tell people, I had to be able to step into a new kind of identity so that I could cope with their reaction. It suddenly wasn't just how I felt about it anymore. It was their reaction. And I now see this in people all the time. I can see that, you know, there are people who, particularly if people stopped during lockdown and they were kind of protected in a little bit of a bubble, you know, to use that word. God, I hoped I'd never hear that word again. But you know what I mean? There were people who weren't going out. They weren't socialising. They weren't doing very much. So they'd made their decision not to drink. Some of them had joined the sober club. But it was when they went out again into the wide world and other people saw them differently, when they had to actually be willing to step up into a new identity. And then, you know, whatever anyone else thinks, whether other people are good with it or not, it is what it is, right? And of course you hope that you'll get support. Of course, when Steve's announcement came out on Friday, I was hoping that there would be all those incredible messages as of support for us, you know, and people saying, oh my God, I'm going to really miss the show, and, you know, loads and loads and loads of support. But it may not have been the case. It may well have been that it was just simply millions of messages from people, you know, or stuff on social media from people saying, well, good, you know, he's had plenty of years, he can sod off, kind of thing. Could have been like that. But either way, it was going to happen. So now I have to step into this new identity as someone who, from October, is no longer part of Steve Wright in the Afternoon. And it's a huge change for me, you know, 23 years, it's huge, right? And for some people who've stopped drinking, they have to step into a new identity of someone who is authentic and true to themselves and choosing to have an alcohol-free drink. Now, depending on your lifestyle, that is massive. And that's the part that often people just don't prep for. They just don't do that prep. They just don't get real clarity on, okay, so who am I now with my fitting into my sober shoes, you know, in these kind of new sparkly sober kit. Who am I now? And it really is a question you have to ask yourself. First of all, you've got to get comfortable with it, of course, yourself. And then you've got to be willing to step up. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. Of course it doesn't. And of course we want people to be okay about it. But ultimately, we have to be okay about it. Ultimately, we have to be strong in our power and our identity as who we are, you know. Anyways, there you go. It just made me really realise that I was actually quite fascinated myself as to the how it felt so completely different once other people knew. I've sat on this since March. I mean, I barely thought about it that much, really. I kind of knew that the time was coming, but it's not really been on my mind all the time. I just got on with it because I've had to, right? But the second other people knew about it, oh my God, it's completely different now, completely different. And I do think that, you know, it's a little similar. Anyways, there you go. Any opportunities, send them my way. I mean, you know, it's not like I've got enough to do, right? I've got an awful lot of stuff to do. But, you know, I love radio and media work. It's in my bones, isn't it? It's completely in my bones. Anyways, and the other thing we did this week was, the other thing that was really interesting, going back and thinking about stuff in the past, was we interviewed Simon Napier-Bell last week, who was Wham's manager. And of course, I was a backing singer with Wham on all those early tours, on everything that Wham did. And God, I watched the documentary and it brought back just so many memories, so many memories. Yeah, really fascinating. Anyways, I want to tell you about this week's guest. Just before I do that, I just want to remind you, you've got just a little bit of time left if you want to book into Family Constellations. It's amazing. That's all I can say. It's amazing work. It's Sunday, 17th of July at King's Langley in Hertfordshire. It's about 25 minutes on the train from London. I'm working with an amazing guy who is a leading trauma expert. He's been doing this work for 30 years. I've only been doing it for a couple of years as a practitioner. But of course, I've known about the work for many years. And together, it's, you know, we work together pretty well. And it's a good combination. And it's a fabulous day. It really is. Unusual, but, you know, what's not to like? You get to leave feeling more open-hearted and compassionate and maybe having faced some stuff from the past that you can deal with quickly, right? You really actually can. That doesn't mean it isn't deep work, because it is. So have a look. If you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you can just then click on Family Constellations. There's also a few spaces left for Sober by the Sea, which is 20th of August, Saturday, 20th of August. So it'd be great if anyone wanted to join us for that. I'm also going to be putting another retreat on at some point in the future. Just got to get my head around dates. And as I've mentioned on podcasts a couple of times, I know this is not for everyone, but I am also offering sober coach training. It's not for people who want to work with those who are clinically dependent. It's for you if you want to work with people who are grey area drinkers, or if you just want to do the course for personal transformation, because there's a huge amount of that, right? And we dig really deep into the self-care piece, and there's a lot of facets to it, as well as the kind of business angle as well, with the PR and promotion and all of that. So if that's something that interests you, just drop me a message and we'll arrange to have a conversation. And I'm a really big believer, you know, that the right people will show up. So if it's right for you, if you're kind of thinking, oh my goodness, I'd love to share some of my, you know, my passion and my inspiration, I'd love to inspire others in whatever capacity, because there's a whole load of different ways of doing this work. It's not just becoming a coach. You might decide to do sober strolls on the beach, like one of our sober coaches, or host meetups, or do an online course, or whatever. There are so many different ways of inspiring other people. So if that's of interest, then drop me a message. But you know where to find all of this stuff, thesoberclub.com, if you want that connection, that inspiration, that accountability. There's just everything there that you're going to want to find. And of course, one of the things we talk about pretty much all the goddamn time is how we get through these social occasions when everybody else is drinking? And of course, the answer is to drink, but just not alcohol, right? Keep the ritual, change the ingredients. I think you've heard me say it a few times. So today's guest, just perfect. I was so pleased to see this book. Derek Brown is the director of Education for Spiritless and a passionate advocate for no and low alcohol cocktails, formerly of the Columbia Room, named Best American Cocktail Bar by the Spirited Awards in 2017. Derek Brown is the author of this great new book. It really is a really cool book. I can't wait to give it to my son, who is a bit of a mixologist. It's just a fantastic book, so called Mindful Mixology. He also wrote Spirits, Sugar, Water, Bitters, How the Cocktail Conquered the World. But now this new one is Mindful Mixology, a comprehensive guide to no and low alcohol cocktails. And I've got to admit, I was amazed when I started looking at Derek's bio. You know, I mean, he's been around doing this kind of stuff for a long time. In 2020, Drinks International named Derek one of the Bar World 100. Wow, how cool is that? A list of the top beverage figures affecting positive change in the global bar industry. I just love it. Enjoy the interview. Keep the ritual, change the ingredients. That's my mantra, as most of you know. And really delighted to chat to Derek Brown, the Director of Education for Spiritless and a passionate advocate for no and low alcohol cocktails. And I've got this great book in front of me. Oh, I just can't wait to dig into some of these. Derek, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Jenny. I'm glad to be here.
I love this book, Mindful Mixology, A Comprehensive Guide to No and Low Alcohol Cocktails. Before we get into this then, tell us a bit about your background. You know, what brought you to be doing this work?
Sure. So I've been a bartender and bar owner for a long time. And I was very driven to create really excellent drinks, so much that in 2015, I was named one of the best bartenders in the U.S. by Imbibe magazine. And 2017, my cocktail bar, the Columbia Room, won the Best American Cocktail Bar.
Wow.
So those are all really nice accolades. And we were trying very hard to make the best cocktails that we could. While that was happening, unfortunately, my life was kind of not doing as well. It turns out that, you know, I had become accustomed to a certain type of drinking that I think a lot of people in the industry, meaning the restaurant and bar industry, have become acclimated to, and it wasn't really serving me anymore. So I decided that I would take a break and address some aspects of my life. And with time and some therapy and a renewed kind of focus, I realized that alcohol just wasn't something that I wanted as a constant in my life. I didn't say I would never drink again. I just decided it wasn't time for me right now. And so as a result, I kind of was in this space where I was like, well, I've been talking about cocktails. I wrote a book in 2019 about Spirit, Sugar, Water, Bitters is the name of it. It's about the history of the cocktail. This has been my life in many ways. And so what am I going to do? And how was I going to, you know, tell this to people that I was like, hey, drink, you know,
yeah, because it was your whole identity, right?
Exactly. And then I'm like, no, I'm just kidding. Let's do something else. So I settled with it, and I really realized that I wasn't asking people to do anything differently. All I was saying, because I'm not against people drinking alcohol. What I realized is that all this time I've been saying drink better. And part of that means for some people, drinking and using better ingredients. For other people, it means using different ingredients. So when I was able to kind of reframe as that, I realized I have a lot to offer people in terms of, you know, recipes and advice on making great non-alcoholic cocktails. And the result of that was Mindful Mixology, which is my new book.
Amazing. So just touching on that for a moment then, you know, you say that in the kind of restaurant and hospitality industry, you know, people typically, you know, drink. I mean, is it that people drink sort of after a shift and find themselves drinking too much? Or is it that people drink while they're working? Or is it just because it's available? What is the kind of scene like?
It's sort of all of the above. Mm. I mean, it is available It's certain bars, and it obviously depends on the bar and the management, but in a lot of places, drinking on the job is not uncommon. You take a shot with your guests, you know, it's a friendly thing and ostensibly a nice thing to do, although obviously it can have negative ramifications. And, you know, when you get off, or when I would get off at the end of the night, when I was a young bartender, I would, you know, start drinking. First of all, the bar would shut down at 2 o'clock in Washington, yeah. D.C., where I'm at. And then 3 o'clock, we'd be done cleaning up more or less. And then we'd start drinking.
Wow.
That would last till 6 or 8 in the morning.
Your poor body clock.
Oh, my gosh. The body clock, the sleeplessness, the lack of exercise, the lack of eating well, all of that led to just a really terrible state. And when you're young, maybe you can take it a little bit more. But as you get older, that where shows, and that's where I was at. So I guess I lived like a vampiric life for a long time. And it didn't seem weird because all of us were doing something similar, and drinking 25 drinks in a night didn't seem weird. But in retrospect, it seems deadly. So once I was able to kind of refocus my life, you know, I realized that there's really great things about having cocktails and going out to bars and going to restaurants. And I want people to have those experiences. But I also want them to have a choice.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So, and that choice should be, they can have alcohol, they can have no alcohol, they can have half the alcohol, they can have low alcohol, whatever they choose. It should not hinder them having something delicious and having a great experience.
Yeah,
so that's been
absolutely.
That's been a big push of mine.
Sure. And the scene that you're in Washington then, I mean, apart from obviously the stuff you do, how available are alcohol-free drinks and alcohol-free cocktails, you know, across the states? Because certainly for a while, you know, since I've been doing this podcast, it's been very interesting because in the UK, as you know, we are, well, for once ahead of you. You don't often get to say that to an American, do you? We're ahead of you. We certainly were, right? We were. And you know, in the sober club community that I run, I would be kind of posting, you know, pictures of liars, cocktails and naughty alcohol-free this and that, you know, and all these brands and Sea Arch, Botanicals. And then there'd be people in the States going, this is just so not fair. I can't find anything. But I know it's changed. I know that you've come up to speed, as it were. So is there a lot of availability now, and are the bars kind of picking up on it?
Yeah, and you all are our leading light. I mean, I love that in Britain and London especially, you've seen such a growing non-alcoholic scene. And that's very inspirational to me. And so, somewhere around 2016, 2017, we started to see that infiltrate the United States, and products like Seedlip, which of course are from England, come out. And I remember that in, I think it was 2015 or 2016, a writer from New York named Julia Bainbridge, who wrote another great book called Good Drinks, which I would encourage you to have her on your show. She's awesome. But she wrote an article that said, imagine a world in which mocktails are considered seriously. And that was such a clarion call, you know, like, and I'm so happy that she wrote that. And I'm so happy that you all have paved the way. And so, yes, now we're in a situation where it's not prolific in the sense that it's everywhere, but it's proliferating, you know, so you definitely see the major markets, which tend to be the early adopters, you know, whether it's New York, LA, Chicago, they have dry bottle shops, they have sober bars, they have bartenders who are taking non-alcoholic cocktails seriously, but it's going to take time. You know, because there's two parts to it. There's the why, which, you know, is, I think once you sit down with somebody, they understand it. Oh, okay. This is not about telling me I shouldn't drink. This is about saying we should have more options.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then there's the how, right? Yeah. Because it's not exactly the same as making a Manhattan or an old fashioned.
Well, yeah. I think you say in the book, don't you? I saw a chapter, which I thought the heading was great. You said, oh, that's right. You said, no alcohol spirits are just as hard to make as alcoholic spirits, if not harder. So yeah. It's not just a case of, you know, let's get a, I mean, certainly if I've been into kind of holiday resorts, if you ask for a mocktail, they give you the kind of sugary syrup, really sort of crappy sweet thing, and a bit of soda water. They just miss out the alcohol, and that's meant to be it. It's not quite right.
It's almost like they're punishing you.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You want alcohol? Fine, have this monstrosity. But yeah, I mean, I wrote an article for a site called Epicurious about making the ideal non-alcoholic piña colada, just for that very reason. Because it's like, it's a great drink, but it can't just be pineapple, coconut. Yeah. And well, it can be, but that's, you know, then it's a kiddie
drink. That's a soft
drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think that, yeah, there is some complications both to making the spirits and making the cocktails. Not complications, really, it's just a different frame, I guess, is a better way to say it. You have to think about what goes into it. And that's what I did in my book. I thought, okay, well, what makes a cocktail in the first place? There's this historic definition that's sugar, spirit, sugar, water, bitters, which is a second plug for my first book. But that is like the 1806 definition, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do we need to keep that one? We don't. Already, you know, like, so what is this sort of organoleptic characteristics of it? You know, and I thought about that and I was like, well, that is, you know, there's this intensity of flavor. You know, when you're drinking a cocktail, you know for certain it is a cocktail. That whether it's a gin and tonic or Manhattan or whatever, there's an intensity of flavor. There's also a texture to it. You know, there's a viscosity and richness that comes from the drink. There is a certain length that comes just from adding the alcohol as an ingredient. And then there's the piquancy, which is that bite or the thing that kind of makes you slam your fist on the table after you've taken a shot of tequila or whiskey. And so I think that if a person is looking to replicate some of those characteristics, then that's what my book aims to do.
Exactly. Carry on.
Well, I was going to say that they certainly don't have to, because lots of people have never drank before and don't care about what a cocktail tastes like.
Yeah, that's true. True.
Tea, yeah, we don't.
Yeah, we don't necessarily have to replicate an alcohol-free an alcohol drink, but we just have to have a drink we like, right? That's exactly. Preferably not, you know, not just a kid's drink, because that's when your unconscious mind says, "Well, this is really not fair," you know, and your kind of inner toddler has a bit of a tantrum. So, you know, we want something grown up, right? So I've literally just opened up the book. I love that. The book's so fabulous. It's just really dip-inable and great images, really great images. And so I've just literally landed on, you've got a whole bunch of classic cocktails here and how we would, you know, replicate them. So I've just landed on Aperol Spritz in here. So you're recommending Liars Italian Orange. I mean, how did you do this work before Liars? Wow. I mean, wow, that's a question, right? How amazing is that brand? Wow.
Yeah. And then that's the thing is, my book, when I was doing it, it had, you know, okay, so there's this gentleman named Camper English, who's from San Francisco. He's a writer, journalist on cocktails and spirits. And he keeps a running list of all of the non-alcoholic spirits in the world, you know, from everywhere he can get his hands on. And so when I started following it, it was like 37 or something like that. Now it's 150.
Wow.
So my book probably was somewhere around 100, you know, like in the middle. And it's even grown since then. But I was lucky to be able to connect to Liars and various other people. Amanda Thompson from Naughty, who is a wonderful human being and a great producer.
Absolutely. Yeah, we love the Naughty Alcohol Free, the fierce, so that, absolutely.
I just wanted to clarify. So my book has no and low alcohol cocktails. And so for some people in recovery, it may not be appropriate, right? If they don't want to have any alcohol at all, my book is not for them. Not that I think that I don't want somebody to feel, you know, like this book is solely non-alcoholic. It does have that in there. But as you mentioned, even the recipes that have alcohol, where there can be a replacement, an analog or alternative, I'll go ahead and put that in there too. So most, if not, not all of them, but most of the recipes can be non-alcoholic. Mm.
Yeah, fantastic. So you got this lovely Aperol Spritz, which looks fantastic. Just flipping back a little bit through the book,
this is really interesting. You've got a matcha maca flip. That looks wild. So obviously that's bringing in maca powder, matcha powder. So you're bringing in some amazing superfood quality there.
Yeah, I mean, where I can, I try to use ingredients that might be healthy or fun, or even have some functional abilities, not in the sense of, you know, intoxication, but maybe, you know, help with energy or, you know, focus or whatever. That's not the goal of it, but that, you know, that sneaks in there sometimes.
Yeah. What do you say to people who, two questions. One, someone who really used to like drinking red wine and now doesn't drink. And what do you say to someone who just says, you know, the reality is I want that really quick buzz that I used to get, that hit, you know, what would be your recommendations?
Well, yeah, if somebody like to drink red wine, then I think that it's kind of challenging because, you know, there's not a lot of good red wine.
Yeah, it's hard to do, isn't it?
Funny enough, to repeat Amanda's name, she recently sent me a sample of their red wine, which is pretty good. So I think that everyone's getting better at doing it. So I would look out for that. And there are a couple brands that do it well. I like hers a lot. I would recommend it. There's a producer in Germany named Jörg Geiger. And he doesn't make wines. He makes ciders that he then doctors up a little bit. And so they're in essence a cocktail in a bottle, but they're wine alternatives. And so they are excellent. They may not taste exactly like a red wine. They might use things like Lapsang Souchong tea and things that are, you know, kind of add some, and even foraged elements. He forages stuff in the Swabian forests or what have you. And sounds very romantic. I would definitely recommend people look to Amanda or Jörg for some really great products. In terms of the buzz, that's a complicated thing because if somebody was to come to me and say, I want a buzz, I understand. But I also say to myself, why do you want the buzz?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that opens up another door.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Maybe I'm not qualified to talk about.
No, I just wondered if, I mean, I suppose where I'm going with the question is, you know, do you sometimes say, look, you know, if you want that kind of hit, stick some cayenne pepper in there, or, you know, can it be that simplistic as you just want the kick?
Yeah. I mean, and that, like, the piquancy aspect of it, or that, like, you know, bite or burn, I think that,
you
know,
that's the word I meant, really. Yeah.
Yeah. No problem. I was like, as far as the buzz, I'm not against people having, you know, experiences and, you know, with whatever they want to have, you know, I just think that, you know, like that, you know, the wanting the hit is a different, different thing, but definitely in terms of just like the piquancy or the bite, I think that there are a few things that really do that well. One, I really like ginger, actually, because it has that warm burn. And because when we're looking back at the history of the cocktail, if we go back there in 1798, there is a mention of cocktail in a London newspaper. And it mentions the cocktail as containing ginger, but interestingly enough, it does not mention the cocktail as containing alcohol. And so there's an American historian, David Wondrich, who suggests that the first mention of the cocktail that we see may have been non-alcoholic.
Right. So, and then would you use like a ginger syrup then, or fresh ginger, or how would you do it?
Yeah, either way. I mean, with fresh ginger, if you do you juice the ginger, if you're that sophisticated to do that, which is not terribly hard, but you do need a juicer probably, that is like a real, like, intense burn. If you do it into a syrup, you can do it really simply in some cases, where you just like make a simple syrup, equal part sugar and water, and then chop up about a thumb of ginger into slices and put it in when it's cooling down. You know, it's that simple. Right.
And then of course there's Jimber. If you tried, you obviously use Jimber, the product Jimber. Oh man, you are going to love it. G-I-M-B-R. Oh my God. You have to go get some. You have to go. You will love it. It's absolutely amazing.
Now, is this a tease and it's not available in the United States?
Do you know what? I think it probably is. I think it probably is, you know. It's really worth you getting some. You honestly, you'd love it. It's fantastic to do exactly both those things you just said. So, yeah. Okay, well, that's a great answer.
But I'd also add to that that there's a couple other things you can do. One I really like is apple cider vinegar, high-quality one. Just a spoonful of that, because it's a product of alcohol without having an intoxicated effect. It has some of the complexity that you get from alcohol, but also that, you know, like kind of bite.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then adding bitterness to it is really important. And some people have capsicum or hot pepper spice. That can be a double-edged sword, because sometimes you feel like you're just having a drink with hot sauce in it. Yeah. Other times it's a nice warm. So it's just a little skill helps with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what about kombucha?
Oh, I love kombucha. Yeah, I think kombucha is a great ingredient. You have to be a little careful when mixing with it, because it is a tea base and it has a lot of liquid to it, so to say. It can be a little watery when used in cocktails. So you have to approach it with the understanding that you're going to use a concentrated amount of it or a small amount of it. And you're going to have to use other things within the drink, depending, again, what you want. If you just want the kombucha, then that's fine.
But have it on its own.
In my book, I have a drink that has an apple kombucha that I really like, with a little grenadine, and I believe that I use chickpea water in it as well, which is called aquafaba. It creates a little thickness.
Yeah, that's a good substitute if you don't want to use egg white, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then, and on that note, then, how important is it that we have, you know, ingredients like egg white and cream and these are some of these other things that we wouldn't necessarily always think of unless we're really getting into doing proper mixing?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, there's two parts to that. One is that, you know, a lot of people who are, you know, reducing their or eliminating alcohol from their lives are probably also thinking about healthy things too, you know, So I think a lot of heavy dairy and that sort of thing can be bad for that. But there are alternatives. You know, there are coconut milk and aquafaba, as we mentioned, and things that you can use that are healthier. And so I'd recommend those. The other part of it is just that, like, in general, with my book, I tried to use household ingredients.
Yeah.
You know, even though there are all these wonderful non-alcoholic spirits, and there are an amazing array of techniques that mixologists use, you know, the home bartender or the home drink maker doesn't really have all those available to them at all times. So I have one drink in there that is ginger, lemon, sugar, apple cider vinegar, salt tincture, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Right? Like all of those things you can get at the grocery store, some of those things or all of those things you might have in your cabinet at home.
Yeah, great. And I know you've got a chapter as well on the sort of basic equipment that we need. And, you know, there isn't that much, is there? There's only a handful of things that we can get quite easily, right?
That's right. And there's always workarounds. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you could start with a spoon and do a lot of work with that.
Yeah.
Turns out.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, what's your view on the whole, you know, glassware, you know, what glasses we should use? Because it actually drives me bonkers that we even have to call a glass a wine glass. How annoying is that even? You know, or a gin balloon. It's really annoying. Why does a glass have to be named by what we're meant to put in it? I find it very frustrating. But I do think having a nice glass is really important.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, so I remember for a while we worked as a sommelier. So there was a lot of discussion about how the glass affects, you know, the taste of the wine. And obviously when there's certain shapes, it emphasizes aromatic qualities to it. And then there's this theory that it deposits the wine at different places on your tongue or whatever, which is kind of just stupid, to be honest with you. The reality of it is, I think, use any glass you want, but it does help to have glasses that look nice, as you said. I mean, we drink first with our eyes. And so if we have a beautiful drink, it helps, especially if it's a non-alcoholic cocktail, which usually, you know, gets relegated to the kiddie table to begin with. You know, I think that having something that looks like a cocktail, it fills that role, makes people feel like they're not getting something lesser. And that's, I think, one of the problems when people stop drinking. They think, oh, that's it. I've given up my life. You know, like I can't go out. I can't have great drinks. I can't have great anything. That's the end of it. And that's the opposite is true.
Yeah,
a new totally. World opens up. All these new doors open up and great non-alcoholic cocktails are out there, but it does take a little bit of effort and energy to make them look nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, part of that process, and as you got in your book, I mean, just beautiful pictures and the way you've pimped some of these drinks is amazing. You know, you've got herbs, you've got mint, you've got berries, you've got, I mean, just really, I'm sure you would, you know, suggest that we stock up on a few of these, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that like, you know, and some of these things you can grow in your garden, you know, mint and basil and things like that. So there's wonderful little things that you can add to your drink that add the aromatic quality that add to the, you know, the way we taste it and the way it looks. So
yeah, good, great. Tell me a bit about ice, using ice in a cocktail.
So I kind of punted this one a little bit in the sense that I thought, all right, look, there are very sophisticated ways to use ice, right? Like to make your own ice, to use large ice, and there that definitely affects aspects of dilution and temperature and so forth. But I realized that for a lot of people, they would just be grabbing the ice from their refrigerator. And so I said, hey, listen, there are places you can go to learn more about ice, but this book, I don't spend a lot of time on that. Mm-hmm. Even though in my past, I learned how to carve like diamonds out of ice, you know, like, and I would put that in a cocktail. But do you want to do that at home? Probably not.
Put it in the glass first, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it, just in terms of a very technical aspect of it, it is better actually to put the spirits into the shaker or mixer first, okay. Then add the ice.
Okay.
When you stir and then you add new ice or fresh ice in the glass.
Okay.
And so the reason to do, sorry, I'm getting interrupted by a call. So I'm just trying to
stop no worries.
That. Is that coming through on your end?
No, I can still hear you. It's all good.
Okay, great. So I'll just ignore it for now. So sorry for that interlude. Hopefully you can edit that out. You want to use fresh ice as well when you're, pour it into a glass and then adding ice. And the reason I say that is because as soon as you add the ice, it's almost like putting it in the oven, right? It starts cooking.
Right.
So you can't really take it out and then doctor it up and put it back in. It's better to build it in the shaker or mixer, mixing tin first, and then add the ice.
Wow. Well, I mean, there's just so much in this book. Look, I can't wait to try some of these recipes. As you say, you've made it, you know, simple enough for us to do at home and they look beautiful. So what were you kind of hoping for, you know, when you put this book out? What would you like people to get from it?
I mean, I think that what I'd like people to get out of it is that you have choices, right? I mean, that, again, for some people, there's this fear that not drinking is missing out on life.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not. It's just another path in life. And there's so many wonderful things there. And I just wanted to add some delicious things that people can try. And so I hope that they try them and like them and that helps them some way in their journey, whether they're sober or they're drinking less or they're just taking a night off. I want to make sure that they have some great options.
And I bet you've had an amazing impact on the people that work with you. I mean, that you must be, you know, pleased that you get to shine your light. There must be lots of people who've started trying these who probably wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited that there's been so many people, you know, reaching out to me saying that they love the recipes and the book. And I've been able to travel a little bit in the United States. I haven't made it overseas yet for the book. But in that case, I'm hoping I really can make an impact.
Brilliant. Well, listen, when you come to the UK, let me know. Let's do something. Let's put an event on and you can mix us all something up, right? That'd be great.
I would love that. Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Brilliant. It's so great to chat to you. The book is Mindful Mixology, A Comprehensive Guide to No and Low Alcohol Cocktails. Derek Brown, you've been a great guest. I love your enthusiasm and fabulous recipes. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much for including me and for your work that you've done as well. It's great.
Thank you.
So go to the show notes and you can find the link to Derek's book. And over the next couple of weeks, going to be introducing you to a few new different alcohol-free drinks. I love coming across, you know, new brands, and there's some just some wonderful stuff coming up. Really just beautiful bottles and just lovely alcohol-free drinks. I hope you got to try the Exmoor tea that I mentioned, by the way, on last week's podcast. Got a great reaction to that. Really, really funky blends of tea made in the UK. So just a reminder then, Sunday 17th of July, Family Constellations in Hearts. Check it out. Sober by the Sea, 20th of August. And if you want to be a sober coach, you drop me a message. You know where to find me, at Janie Lee Grace, pretty much anywhere on social media. You can always find me via the Sober Club as well. And come and join us if you want in on the accountability and the support. And it's not just for if you're just starting out. There are people in the Sober Club who've been sober for 5-6 years, longer than I have, right? Because it's never about just not drinking. Of course it isn't. It's all about the scaling up. What's next? What can we do next? How do we find our purpose? How do we, you know, all very good questions for me right now, right? How do we scale up? What's next for us? What exciting things do you have in store for me today? That was what Sue Stone said, wasn't it, on that great podcast with Sue. She's so inspirational. I sent Sue a message to tell her what was, you know, the news that was about to break. And rather than, you know, a kind of a response that you'd expect, like, oh, no, oh, dear, poor you, you know, that's such a shame. Oh, I'm so sorry. She just literally wrote back, oh, wow, that's such positive, amazing news. I can't wait to see what's next. I thought, well, yeah, that's it, isn't it? That's it. That's how we need to feel about our sobriety. How exciting is it? Can't wait to see what's next. See you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.